Welcome to Shadows from the Tree, the podcast that invites you to explore the curious world of dark genealogy, uncovering secrets, scandals, crimes, and darker events that shape family trees. Whether you're a seasoned genealogist, just beginning to explore your family history, a history buff, or even a crime junkie, we offer something for everyone. Join us, your hosts, Danielle and Michelle, in each episode as we share stories from over a century ago for the first time with each other, centered around a common theme. By using newspaper archives as our guide and conducting research using historical records, we piece together these often forgotten stories and gain a deepening understanding of the challenges those involved face. Our hope is to connect you, our listeners, with your ancestors' past, one story at a time. All right, Michelle.
Ooh.
We're back.
Welcome back.
And it's been a little bit of a roller coaster, I feel like. Yeah. I think, first off, specifically, we just covered the stories on natural disasters. And then literally we watched a natural disaster unfold before our eyes. Like,
the fires in California are so scary.
Yeah. And you know, I had like that emotional story just with the families we uncovered. And I can't even imagine like being there today, like, or fathom what that's like for those people. So our thoughts are with everyone. You know, I hear a lot of people supporting each other and donating and all of those things. And it's probably going to be a long journey to recovery, yeah. But you know, hopefully everyone got out as safely as possible, and it just puts things into perspective. Like we said about natural disasters, they just literally can happen.
Yep, blink of an eye.
It's yeah, just,
everything's gone.
Yeah, so very tragic. So that happened, and I do want to say I'm very glad that my story this week was not as disheartened, like it was not as heavy, so I was able to actually dig into a story and just kind of live in the imaginary world of it, really. And we decided to do ghost towns, and kind of prompted off of our episode last week, and yeah, it was really cool. So I'm interested in what your story is going to be about, but I'm going to go first. And for me, again, it was just like really exciting to research this ghost town, but it's also a place I will put on my bucket list.
You're like, gonna go visit?
I would love to. It's really cool. And as I started to dig in more, it definitely has a very large tourist attraction, and people have videos on YouTube of visiting, and it's really cool. So I'll get into it. So it's Bodie, California.
Okay.
So Bodie as it stands today is a California state historical park that is a gold mining ghost town.
Oh.
So Bodie is preserved in what is called a state of arrest decay, meaning that it's maintained to prevent further deterioration, but not actively restored to look like it did in its prime day. But because it was kind of abandoned, you kind of get to see what it was like in its heyday because things are just left as is.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's really, really cool. But before I really get into these details, I wanted to just kind of speak about how the town got its name. And I got a lot of this information from the California State Park website. So there was a guy, W.S. Bodie. A lot of surname misspellings, confusion. I saw Williams, Whitman, Waterman. Bodie spelled B-O-D-Y, then two D's and a B-O-D-E-Y. So I didn't go down the rabbit hole. I just kind of pulled some information from the state park and just, you know, he was from New York, and in his mid-40s, he discovered gold in the hills north of Mono Lake, California in July 20 of 1859. And that winter, while returning with supplies, he died in a snowstorm, which weirdly built to last.
Sorry.
So
sorry to bring that up again.
Yes. So the town was named after him, and what happened was someone was spelling his name on a sign as B-O-D-I-E, which was a misspelling, although there was lots of misspellings. They stuck with that name, and that's what became of the town. And it's just really unfortunate that, you know, he didn't get to see the success of the town that it had. But I guess that's what happens sometimes. And as word spread, people flocked to Bodie and transformed the town. And within a few years, it became a boon town. And that was from 1878 to 1881, with its peak kind of occurring in 1880. So there's really a lot of pictures and things like that out there. Like, there was aerial maps of what the town looked like, a lot of old black and white photographs. So to be honest, I kind of like, I did some historical record looking, but I didn't do as much as I normally do because I was so fascinated just looking at all aspects of like the then and now pictures. But Bodhi had been estimated to have a population of over 8,000 residents.
Wow.
Yeah, which meant that, you know, the town needed establishments to accommodate right. everybody. And with the output of the ore that they were bringing in, I saw estimates of $3 million a year,
whoa.
Which is in 1880 dollars, yeah. mind you. So they had a lot of money doing that. And which meant that they, you know, over those years, they had about over 2,000 structures, and Main Street alone was over a mile in length.
Wow.
Yeah, so they had it all going.
It was booming.
It was booming. They had, like, everything, a general store, bank, post office, school, church. I saw something that said, like, 65 saloons, whoa. A brewery, a dance hall.
No one was thirsty.
No. Opium dens, which were popular in the time, gosh. Brothels,
oh boy.
Gaming halls.
I'm just picturing the Wild Wild West.
Oh, yes. Like, and, yeah, it's exactly it. And they even had a Chinatown, so.
Oh, of course.
But to your point, yes, I made a note that, yeah, that phrase didn't come the Wild West for nothing. And specifically in Bodhi, there, you know, those who were considered unsavory, disrespectable people, they would earn a final resting place in the Boot Hill Cemetery, which is located on a ridge overlooking Bodhi and is outside the, in quotes, fence of the town.
So you were kicked out after you died.
So you weren't allowed. Yeah, so there was a book called Bodhi's Gold. It was by Margaret Sprague. And she stated that this wasn't to ensure that they could not decompose in the same ground as the proper people in the town.
Oh, boy.
So.
Because that really matters.
Yeah, you know? Yep. So the cemetery, in the Boot Hill Cemetery, does include some bad men of Bodhi, as they were called, who partook in murders, shootouts, barroom brawls, stagecoach holdups, which were just kind of happening on a regular occurrence. And I did, you know, Boot Hill had a Find a Grave Cemetery like page, and so I was kind of poking around on there, and yeah, shootouts and murders, and this one drank too much and then got in a fight, and so that was kind of interesting.
Sounds like a lively bunch.
Yeah. Yep. But, you know, it wasn't only the men. Women were also deemed, quote, naughty, as several of them took to prostitution and became ladies of the night, which was a popular thing in mining towns due to the lack of available employment for women. And also, you know, these rapidly growing communities, which had a large male population, you know, it just definitely led to that, you know, high demand for the sexual services, shall I say. And these women were known to move from town to town, kind of following the boom and bust of the mining business, just getting their income as they could. And prior to Bodhi's boom, Virginia City, Nevada experienced their silver mining boom in the early 1870s, and they were said to have over like 300 prostitutes at the time. And then some of them made their way to Bodhi. So, and that kind of leads us into talking about kind of my theme of the story. Unfortunately, prostitutes, so no children allowed. So, it, you know, it kind of just talks about the red light districts, which I've heard of, but I've never really like done any research or partook in any of things like that. But, you know, there's still some today, like in Amsterdam and things like that. So, the red light district of Bodhi had what they called cribs, which were like small cabins where guests could be entertained, and parlors, which were, there were multiple, along Bonanza Street. And I also found a note that there were two high-class brothels in town, the High Grade and the Ozark. And there's like a picture, I'm just going to show you quick, of like these little cabins. These were back then. This is how these are two together now. There's only two left surviving in the actual town. But in this picture, you can see like women hanging out the window. They're like in the doorway, probably just like waiting for, you know,
the next
their
customer.
People. The next customer. Well put. So, and interactions with men were not only limited to sort of their sexual services. It was often, you know, spent with time with the minors doing traditional female things like mending socks, helping when they were sick, or just sometimes just talking. And so some men would get attached to their favorite woman, and they became like companions. And as like a fact, prostitution was not illegal in California until 1910. So these women weren't living outside the law. They were just outside of what the proper lifestyle,
moral
yeah. Whatever, and yeah. It often made them outcasts of the town. So with the gold mines booming, men had money buying liquor and, you know, having their services. So from an article in the River Herald written in November 3rd, 1994, it mentions that in 1880s, it was estimated that there were 10 men in town for every one woman, which like boy. Made it a profitable business.
Oh boy.
Yes. So you had the alcohol in here and there, and it's just, it gets wild. So I'm just going to shift my story a little bit and talk about one specific woman named Charlotte Lodi Wilson Joel. Who, you know, if you are familiar with Bodie, you would have heard her name. She's pretty popular and people like wanting to find out more research about her. And in that same Review Herald, which was out of Mammoth Lakes, California, it really summed up her story. And that was written in 1994. And it had the headline, "The Red Light Ladies of Bodie," which said that she came from a rural Iowa town. And she was described in a book that she had soft hazel eyes and light curly hair. She had been divorced at the first husband I had listed as a New Inn, Callan. So she was divorced, which made life hard for her. And she eventually made her way west and started to, you know, it was turned really to prostitution for to support herself, which I get it. And I feel like some people really didn't have a choice in the matter.
It's just, it was part of survival.
Yeah,
really.
Exactly. So you feel bad. So at the age of 27, Lodi arrived in Bodie and began working as one of the higher class prostitutes, in which was called Virgin Alley and Maiden Lane, which was in their red light district. She soon caught the eye of Eli Joel, who was a butcher who co-owned two butcher shops with his partner, Charles Donnelly. And despite Lodi's past, Eli fell in love with her and they soon actually were married. So they married, you know, July 4th of 1881. And this was to the dismay of Bodie's high society that they were just not having that. So Eli built a house for them, for him and his wife, which still stands on Main Street if you go visit the ghost town. Yeah. And, but so Charles Donnelly, the partner of the butcher shop, the wife was not having it. She was a social figure in town as well as a painter, and she even tried to force her husband to end his business partnership with Eli because of the marriage. I know.
You have anything better to do, Lainey?
I know. Seriously. Oh, it's crazy. So Lodi soon made attempts to gain her stature in society. She held an elaborate dinner party, but none of her guests that she invited came.
Ugh.
Just like rude, right? Sad. So Eli then decided that if his partner's wife could be a painter, that he would encourage Lodi to paint. So she became an artist, and one of her paintings hangs today in the museum at Bodie. So you can actually see her painting, which is wild because it was probably like, you know, 1900s. Yet Lodi never really achieved the respectability through her art, which is, again, just, she's trying.
Yeah.
But she gave one last attempt to try, and she decided she would go to a planned masquerade ball. She wore a beautiful gown and was chosen as the woman with the most outstanding costume. Yet when she took off her mask and revealed her identity, she was forced to leave the ball.
Oh
yeah.
Gosh.
And realizing that she would never be accepted into Brody's society, Lodi and Eli became somewhat reclusive. And one night, November 1899, Lodi became ill, and Eli bought some medicine from a doctor and gave it to his wife, but within a day, she was dead. So rumor has it that, you know, people were saying she committed suicide. Others said that she had been given
poison.
That's your thing.
Oh, no.
That I'm given poison instead of medicine by the doctor. But there really wasn't no evidence of that at that time that suggested that there was anything to do with like a murder or nothing really proved any of it because they
what
weren't
was
really,
she sick from again?
It didn't really say, so no. She was just sick, yeah. So I don't know. So there wasn't much written down information about that specific thing. But after she died, there was a lot of debate going on in the town as to whether or not Eli would be able to bury his wife inside the cemetery because of her past history. And Eli eventually won, and Lodi was buried along the extreme southern edge of the cemetery. So as close to the edge perimeter as possible. But she made it.
Yeah.
She made it.
Was he buried next to her? Did you know that?
So I do have, in this next part, I don't have an exact knowledge of that, but what Eli did was he built an iron fence around the grave, which still stands today.
Okay.
And he, you know, mourned the loss of his love and made daily visits to her grave. And on Memorial Day, he decorated the grave with flowers and placed a large photo of her. And he died in 1914, so he had quite a bit of time.
Yeah.
To himself, you know. He ended up dying in Texas. I literally was just doing all this before I came here, so. I didn't get to see yet whether he was buried near her, but he did end up getting buried in Bodie.
Okay.
But look at this picture. Like, I just love it. I'll post it on social media. It's basically him standing next to this grave, and you can see how it's, like, all decorated, and there's, like, kids standing near there. And
oh, wow. That's really elaborate.
Clear picture, right?
Wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
You got the
he
kids
really
near
loved
there.
Her.
He did. Aww. And, you know, he might have been going to those brothels or cribs just to find true love. Like, where else was he going to find a woman? Most of them were either probably married
to
someone.
Like,
yeah. Exactly.
No
exactly. So there is a picture of her as well. And there's some older pictures of their house together. So that's her. She's got some curly hair. I believe this is like what they say the inside of her house was, their house was.
Oh.
That's the fence.
They had a lot of belongings and stuff.
Yeah.
It's cool.
And then, yeah. So that's kind of her story. But there were a few other legendary people to know. There was Rosa May, or like Rose Elizabeth White, who was also a prostitute. And she, unfortunately, ended up being buried outside the fence in Boot Hill. Despite what people said was like having a kind heart, she like nursed sick minors during an epidemic, which ended up killing her in the end herself.
Aww.
But yet she can't make it inside the fence. I know. This whole thing about the fence is so fascinating. I was like on that, like the Boot Hill Cemetery and just like the normal Bodie Cemetery.
I mean, they're dead. Like they don't really care, but it's just the fact that like
you can't
somebody living cares enough to not allow them to be buried inside
it's
the town.
It's so fascinating.
They could live in the town, but they can't be buried
right.
in the town. Okay.
Yeah. I found it so fascinating. I was like, this is so interesting. So that was Rosa Rose. And then let's see who else there was. There was also someone that kept on, you know, in a few articles being mentioned, Emma Goldsmith, who I actually started trying to research, but there really wasn't much, like, to go on. Like, she didn't have a house standing. She didn't, like, so, and really there wasn't a lot of records. But this is literally what was in the newspaper for her death date. Dead. Emma Goldsmith, one of Bodie's lowest levels, died about 3:00 this morning.
Just that's it.
Where do you think she's buried?
On the outside.
On the outside of the fence.
Oh, no.
I know. Isn't that just crazy? And I read like she, again, like she probably wasn't doing it for fun. I mean,
no.
Yeah.
She's just getting taken advantage of too.
Yeah.
Like I'm imagining like,
yeah,
some man running the brothels, you know,
exactly.
And just like didn't care.
And then there's these opium dens and alcohol. It was just a bad mix of everything.
Were the men who owned the brothels buried in the town or outside
the
town?
Yeah, good point.
You know?
Yeah, that's a good point. I have to do some more research. And then there was Eleanor, nicknamed Madame Moustache Dumont. So she was a well-known gambler, and she also owned a few businesses like doing in a gambling den. So she would be the one doing, like, I guess they called it 21.
Okay.
And
she was like a dealer or something.
Yeah, no women could be in these businesses, but like she was the only one. And I guess that Madame Moustache was just way she aged, and there was like a slight Shadow. I don't know. She ended up rolling with it. Good for her. And that was her nickname. But they're, again, not going too deep into what happened to her. There was a little bit of, like, mystery, I guess, around it. Like, did she overdose? Was it suicide? So, I think, either way, it didn't end up good. And I think, regardless of her business that was very profitable in the beginning, I think towards the end, she definitely lost a lot of it. So, and I don't recall if she's on the inside or the outside, but she is buried in Bodie. So, and this is Rosa, and then that's Madame Moustache.
I love that there's pictures of
them. I know. Right? Really just...
like, they look like ladies. I know. Of the time. I don't know. They don't look...
One of them, I don't know if it was Rosa. Like, she just had to be in prostitution for, like, into her, like, older years. Because, you know, just...
trying to live.
Very sad. Alrighty. So, just towards the end here of Bodie in 1881, the bust began and the town's population declined drastically and people started moving elsewhere following the boom. And in 1892 and again in 1932, fires destroyed what a lot of Bodie, leaving less than like 10% of the structures that you'll see today if mm-hmm. you go. And for what remains, or for those who remained in the town following trying to strike, you know, gold still, it finally ceased in 1942, which is really the very end of Bodie being a town. And even though today you can't see all the buildings, even when I was like just doing my research, you really can just like imagine what it was like seeing all the interiors as they were left, containing like original furnishings, personal items, stocked goods, artifacts. Yeah, you really can like think about what it was like. And the general store that's there is now the museum, which also has more artifacts in there, which hangs that painting of Lodi's that she had there. But, you know, thinking about how it's been able to stand this long because of, like, its remote location, I guess it's down, like, a gravelly type road in the mountain area. It just, you know, did lack intervention for decades, which... kind of was good because with the climate and everything, with the cold winters and hot summers, you know, less people were in there causing damage to it. Even mm-hmm. though some of the decay was because of weather, it just allowed it to be preserved, I guess, a little bit longer. So some consider the site actually like a ghost town being like haunted due to the many deaths that were there, whether it was illness, freak accidents, mining accidents, the lawlessness. And I did read one, there's one grave there buried that you can still see that's like an angel. And it's like a girl, young girl, who I found the newspaper article. And it was that someone was doing work around their house, the pickaxe, and she just leaned over at the wrong time. And it was just, whoa. Yeah.
That's not what I was expecting.
No. I was reading that. And I was like, wait, what? This is just so horrible.
Yikes.
Yeah. So like, there definitely are in more interesting sites there for those people who like, you know, reading people's stories. But due to it being a state park, you are prohibited from removing anything from the area, which is good because they have a lot of protocols.
I'm trying to preserve it. Yeah.
Yep. And I did read, though, a local legend that said if visitors took a souvenir from Bodie, even a pebble, they would experience misfortune until they returned the item. So you've been warned if you want to visit this place like I do.
If you want to curse.
Don't take anything. Which could be a good thing to look into maybe in a future episode. So that's where I'm going to leave it. Definitely check it out. I'll post some pictures. But this place, it looks awesome. And I'm just going to show Michelle. I'll post some. This is like there was a fire at the bank and all that is left is the vault. So you can actually peek inside and see the vault. The bricks and they have. The door. Yeah. I mean, these are how the buildings are today. That's the church.
Wow.
These are just some of the rooms that were just like left.
Well, there's even a crib and
bed and radio. Like, it's so cool. The different wallpapers. So you literally pay.
Look at all the buildings.
You pay like $8, I think, and you literally just walk around the area. Tables, that's the school.
Yep, the school desk.
The blackboard and
That's awesome.
You want to go with me?
Yeah.
It's a good trip story. To California.
Yeah. Sounds fun.
But awesome.
All right. So mine is on the East Coast.
Okay.
All right. We're in Connecticut. So I was, you know, talking to one of my other friends about this, and she said, oh, I've heard about this ghost town where you're not even allowed to step foot in this area anymore. And I was like, what?
Ooh, why?
What are you talking about? So I was given the name Dudleytown, Connecticut. And it's not really ever been a town. It was just kind of like, you know, how we are.
Like little town, small towns, yeah, have small names.
Towns, yeah. They're just part of a bigger town. So it's part of Cornwall, Connecticut. So
can't say I've ever been.
No, me either. It's on the very western side of Connecticut. And the land there, even though people started settling there, it's not very good for crops or planting. It was, you know, kind of in a weird area, kind of like a valley, and it wasn't a very good spot to, you know, have a farm.
Be successful living,
in that time. You know, when settlers were coming in, it was not the best. So we'll start with the curse, okay?
Okay, now I'm definitely not ever going.
We'll just start with the curse, you know.
Just get it out there.
There were certain, like, rumors about the, like, people who founded the area. So we'll just go back. So an Old English word for land was lay, L-E-I-G-H, or lee. So the area was called Dud's Lee.
Wow.
Many centuries later, we're talking about a surname because it's necessary. Some people like to look at the occupation, but this was Dudley. So we're talking back in England, though. So the story and the curse of Dudleytown actually begins in England in the year 1510. So this is all, like, rumor, right?
Okay.
So
yeah.
I'm going to, like, debunk a few things here go. But all right. This is my first introduction to it. When I was looking at it, it was like, wait, this is all connected to King Henry VIII?
Oh, a curse?
Yeah.
Interesting.
So it was 1510. Edmund Dudley was beheaded for plotting to overthrow King Henry VIII. At the time of the beheading, the curse was allegedly placed on their whole family for treason.
Oh, gosh.
So it states that the Dudleys from Edmund's lineage found themselves surrounded by horrors. So his son, John Dudley, Duke of Northumberland, followed his father's footsteps and also tried to overthrow the crown by marrying his son, Guilford Dudley, to Lady Jane Grey, the original queen for a day. Do you remember that story?
Slightly. I don't remember all the details, but I remember that.
There's a show on Prime. It's like totally, like, a kind of like a fantasy show, but I watched it recently. I was like, that's weird that this is connected to Lady Jane Grey. Okay, we'll just keep going with this. So John Dudley's third son, Robert, Earl of Leicester, left England to avoid losing his own head. So
smart.
So they found themselves settling in Dudleytown. But okay, so there's really no direct, like, documented connection between that Dudley family and the Dudleys
and the kid who moved here
in actual Connecticut. Okay. So we're leaving it there. I don't want to be people coming at me
saying, like, they're connected
this
or not,
this is just the story that, like, fed
it's
the
floating
curse
around out there. Yeah,
feeds the imagination, so to speak. Okay, so they're cursed. Anyways, so they came to settle in Dudleytown, and they said that there was a William Dudley who was born in Richmond, Surrey, England, on September 11th, 1608. And then his son William boarded a ship to America in 1639. And then his son Joseph came to. So, like, supposedly that's the line, but it's not really documented.
There's a lot of people in between correspond to that.
Yep. And then, so Dudleytown is born in, like, late 1730s, early 1740s. It wasn't really incorporated as a town. So it just is an act stated that 50 private parcels of land, many in the western parts of the Connecticut towns, were auctioned off. So the Cornwall auction began at 50 pounds per parcel. So that's not very much. So they
were just getting up the land.
Yep. February of 1745, Thomas Griffiths bought some land in Cornwall from Eleazar Whittlesey. So today Dudleytown looks much like it did back then because it's now forested. It's very thick with forest, rocky terrain, and it's in the shadow of three mountains. So Bald Mountain, Woodbury Mountain, and Colt's Foot Triplets. Because of the location and the dense tall woods, it gives this, like, ominous feel.
Like a dark forest.
Yeah, exactly. It's actually incorporated and it's called Dark Entry Forest. So we'll get further into that. Oh. Yeah. So there's been a lot of things that have happened. So the town never got really big. At the most, they've got to like 2,000 residents.
Yeah.
But they slowly started to dwindle away when, you know, the land wasn't all that great. And these strange happenings began happening. So we got our list here.
Oh, no. Okay.
Okay. So the first kind of list I made. So I have like 6 or 7 names here. So if your family falls into this, then you can, you know, collaborate, corroborate, say myth, fact, whatever you want. But this is what I'm going with today. August of 1774. So we're talking like revolution time.
Yeah,
okay.
Way back.
Adoniram Ram, it's Adoniram Carter. So his entire family falls sick with this mystery illness. You know, nowadays could be anything.
Yeah.
Back then could have been anything.
Yeah.
So they didn't have
the historical
Yeah. And they all died. So that was like the first happening
event. Yeah.
Yep. So then we have 1792. A Gershon Hollister was working on his neighbor's house, and they call it a barn raising, but there were talk of it being a murder, but no one really knows if he actually fell or if he was murdered, and that happened in 1792.
Okay.
And then there's another Carter family, Nathaniel Carter's family. He left the town with them, and they were settling along Delaware, but it was like native land, or like they didn't realize, I guess, or whatever. So he ended up getting murdered along with his wife and his infant, and then
then
his other 3 children were kidnapped, and I guess someone from Connecticut paid their ransom for 2 of the children, but one of them
was in 1700s.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So I think that was 1760s, I want to say.
People were being held ransom. Okay.
yeah. So they got a couple of them back, and then, and one of them, the one that stayed, there's like talk that later down the line, one of them became like a supreme, like a court justice or something. So that whole line, the Carters, there's a lot
That's
of Carter.
That's a very
families.
Popular name too. Yeah.
So it could have been a different Nathaniel Carter, but for my reading, there was like a whole family story I read for a good hour about what happened to the family, and I was like, I don't want to read that.
All stemming from this one town.
This one town. So they left the town. I don't know why they left the town or why they would go to that spot.
Delaware, yeah.
But that's, you know. Okay. So now we're going to skip ahead a little further. In April of 1804, there was a Sarah Fay. She was out on her front porch. And guess what happened to her? Struck by lightning.
Sounds familiar from...
Yeah, I'm not laughing. I'm sorry.
Oh,
Sarah Fay struck by lightning. And then there's also Mary Cheney Greenlee. She was married to someone, Arthur Young Greeley. And she was well known because he was a politician, or he actually had run for president, I want to say.
Oh.
So correct me if I'm wrong. But
trying to be someone, yep.
There's a whole obituary about when she passed. I guess in the stories that I read, it said she had committed suicide, but in her obituary, it sounded like she had a disease of the lungs. So I'm like trying to.
Right.
Seems like
how did it get to that?
Yeah, seems
conclusion.
Like she could, maybe she was sick for so long
she
couldn't
over
take it.
It
anymore. But it seemed like she didn't commit suicide. But I. Could be wrong. I'm just reading what the newspaper to say.
Which can be a little dicey.
But then it's like the game of telephone, you know? Like,
oh, yeah.
All these stories that people have passed, is it like, yes, something happened, but was it as...
Was it really as directed to that?
But we've got pictures of her.
Oh, good.
She has, like, a monument
with
her husband.
Look at that monument.
Right? Like, I mean, it wasn't as fancy as the...
But
the,
still.
The one that the prostitute
with all
got.
The, with all the flowers.
Yeah. That one was beautiful. This is just her husband's bust on top of a, like, she didn't get much recognition here. So
that's so true.
I feel like that was more for him. But anyways, So, and then we're going to go to John Patrick Brophy. So this is the end of the 1800s. So 1890s, there was a fire and his wife died in the fire and he lost everything. But then his children just vanished after the fire. Like, they were still alive, but they just took off. There's like stories of they were stealing stuff like sleigh robes. I don't know what a sleigh robe is. I don't know either.
Yep.
So they were stealing sleigh robes and then the fire and then they disappeared. Or did they steal them after? I couldn't find a newspaper article to corroborate any of that. But it was in several different sources. So it's someone said it somewhere. I don't know who said it, but
I got to Google what a sleigh robe is.
Seems like craziness to me. But they just vanished and then he took off too because there's no record of his grave or anything. Well, there's two graves that say John Brophy and there's two different like
dates, so it could be
causes of death, but that didn't match like what they were. So fires
sounds like very bad record keeping,
right? But there's like some people said he was hearing voices and then there was like the children saw things in the woods and so a lot of people, there's like people who lived there were getting very sick when they were older, so there might have been a high incidence of dementia in the area. So there were some people saying maybe there was like lead in the water or like
something because, causing it,
because a lot of people were kind of going off the deep end, especially this last one. So there's Dr. William Cogswell Clark. Okay. So he had a wife named Harriet. And he came from New Jersey. He was a doctor. He was a professor. He taught surgical procedures.
Okay.
They lived in New York for a time, but they built a place up in Dudleytown.
Which is interesting.
Right.
Like what it had going for him that he wanted to.
Well, it was like, it was just their weekend stuff.
I see. This they is would go back house.
And, yeah, this was like the summer home, you know, when I had enough of the hustle and bustle of the city.
Then I'll go.
I'm going into the woods.
To Connecticut.
And so they would have their place in Connecticut. And then one weekend he needed to go into the city and he left her behind. And like, you know, there was a train there. So he took the train into the city. And then when he got back, she was out of her mind.
Like, really?
Yeah.
So young still.
She wasn't elderly or anything. So this was 1917, I want to say, by then. Like, they had come in the early 1900s to establish. They had, like, started, like, a small cabin, and then he worked and built some other, like, houses on the property. Mm. But when he went to go find her, like, she was, like, in a corner and, like, screaming. Just like, I don't know. Some of the stories behind this one is really crazy. So she lost her mind while he was away, and then like,
and him being a doctor worried about that, like, it must have been real bad.
Yeah, so he just like didn't know what happened to her. And so they just like, I guess some stories say like the family said she was never institutionalized, but also I don't know. Where did they come up with it that she went crazy? Like, it doesn't seem logical.
You need that missing piece.
Right.
Of, like, what really happened there.
Yeah. Like, it says.
Which, does anyone ever know? Will anyone know that? Probably not. Hey.
Yep. So, according to the daughter, she had a chronic illness. They didn't know for what. That she had for years. But it does say that she did end up committing suicide.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So another one.
So it stayed.
Yeah.
For a while.
Yeah. And then she just, so in like, it was either 17 or 18, she did end up committing suicide. Oh. Apparently pain was too much or she was just madness. Not in the right
state of mind.
Really knows. So, but Dr. Clark still remains like established in Cornwall / Dudleytown. So not only that, he still goes and visits that house that he settled, and then he would bring other doctors and nurses there. And then in the early 1924, he actually incorporated. He's the one who started the Dark Entry Forest.
Oh.
Yeah. So he had given the money. There's like pictures of him.
So what's the purpose of making it?
So that no one would knock the land down. No one would, like, destroy the area.
But then it became all private property to him.
Yeah. Well, in that, like, incorporated under the Dark Entry Forest. Gotcha.
Right, the company's name or business name or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, it's so that whole area is owned by Dark Entry Forest, which is part of Cornwall now. So Dudley Town doesn't really have any residents because
I see
it's like this forest area.
And people live there?
No.
Okay, just forest. It's just trees and nature.
And that's why people say they go in there and they hear like whispers. Oh. And then there's like lots of owls. So people hear owls a lot and then they get freaked out by the owls. And I'm like, I hear owls all the time in my house. I don't know about you, but owls is like a nightly occurrence here.
But you pair that with the stories and that would make me freaked out. That's what makes, I can be like calm with little things, but you pair two things together and I'm like, oh yeah, no, I'm out of here.
Yeah. So, and some people said they'd go into the forest and then everything would stop. Like the birds, wind there would be no bird sounds. There'd be nothing. It would just be complete silence.
But people have made it in and made it out.
Well, yeah, people trespass and don't follow the rule all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? So, yeah, there's been lots of like the historical society's like, do not come here. We don't want you. Go away.
Yeah. Like, so what's the purpose now? Like, just to, if no one can go there or literally trespass,
it's just a protected land. Like, that's it. You know, we have like land trusts and stuff. Yeah. We're not allowed. Like, there's ones down the street we can't.
Yeah,
grow
but
in.
Nobody in town probably wants
to get that and build on it. Stories either about like people getting struck by lightning down the street. I don't know.
Huh. That's interesting.
Yeah. There is so.
So no one can build on it, nor does probably any business want to buy any land or anything.
They can't. It's protected. It's incorporated. So he actually, I guess he had a friend who was, he brought in to build on it. So there was like the Historical Society has a website that I was on. It is.
Oh, I'd love to know what his purpose was. What was his dream in doing this? Just to protect the land?
He wanted to establish public forests, helping to create like.
Oh, nice. Climate.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if they knew about climate change or anything back then, but so it was a group of New Yorkers that he had brought in. They acquired that 800 acres.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So he had brought in someone from Yale, actually, from the Yale Forestry School graduate. His name was Edward Behre, Behre, and worked at as a forester. So they were planting thousands of red pine saplings. In like 1916, I guess before his wife went
crazy,
you know, off the deep, you know.
Oh no!
And there's a picture of him building fences out of the chestnut trees.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it looks like nice land. I mean, other than it probably not being like you said, good for crop or anything, it looks like a nice.
Yeah, and they had a camp. Area. I guess there was a summer camp where kids would go.
Okay,
it's like in that.
Now, did you find out anything about like how he felt about? That like did he think it was haunted? Did he think it was scary?
I don't think he did because he called it Dark Entry, which is also I guess maybe to keep people off of it. Maybe that was the idea. Maybe he was like, I don't want people. Maybe he started the whole thing.
Maybe
he made up all this.
It's interesting, right? Like it's like one of those things where unless you're really like, you get a certain car, right? And then you're driving down the street and you're like, oh, that's my same car. Oh, there it is too. Like, it's like at the front of your mind, so you're recognizing it more. And it's almost like all these things happened all the time. Deaths and sickness maybe leading to some type of hysteria type thing. But maybe they just connected it so much or they made it
cursed.
Made it feel like it was.
And it was a small town. So, you know, if someone gets sick or like I feel
everybody
like
knows.
It's a bigger percentage of your group,
it's a bigger impact
dead. You know, it's not just like if
that's
you're in the
true.
City and a
which
few
maybe
hundred
made
people.
It feel then like something's out
and you
to get
know
us.
I feel like if you're in that era, you know your neighbors, you know what's going on, like in that closer knit area. But I don't know,
that's interesting.
Maybe people did go crazier
because
of the water or the land.
Who knows?
Or you know, it's gonna lead to I think another episode we're doing for like the family line of
through the
kind
family
of insanity.
Yes.
So is it genetics? Is it the water? Is it the forest? Is it
is it
Indian land. Like there were tribes there before they
took over.
They settled. So was this a burial ground? Was this like I mean
you don't
it's
know.
Between the mountains.
Well, listen, I'm not going to go find out. So.
I'm not going there. At first, I was like, oh, I could drive there. And then I'm like, all
reading.
These things I'm reading, that's like, go away.
No.
Don't come here. We don't want to. Like, they have trails in Cornwall. Like, they're like, use our trails that are open to the public, you know. And then they're like, no, you cannot have a map of Dudley Town. It doesn't exist. Don't come looking.
Did you find any like old records?
Yeah, you can find it. I'm just not telling people where it is.
Good point. Good point.
Because I don't want to be the cause. There is a $75 fee, like a fine, if you even park near where it is.
Oh, really? Yeah.
So the cops do not joke around with this area.
Okay, that's so interesting. Don't go in,
don't do any like witchcraft, seance, anything, because they found some weird stuff that has been done in the forest. So,
oh gosh,
don't do it.
Do not go. But please do tell us if you have any relatives. I'd be curious if anyone has any connection.
Give me more in depth, because I feel like I just touched the surface of this.
And nor
like,
do you probably want to go deeper.
No, I feel like that was enough for me. Yeah, that's good.
Interesting. Who knew? Yeah, I mean, I'm really just intrigued at the fact that it turned into this, like, you know, my story last week of the ghost town in Melva, that was just like now just open land that I heard some business bought, unfortunately. But, and then my mine in California now, like the state took it over. So I guess it makes sense that some type of entity would have taken over the land.
Yeah. They're just trying to.
Just the reason they called it a dark forest is.
Yeah, dark entry.
Dark entry, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this was it back in 1905. Look how tall and thick.
Oh, wow, look
it's
at the
really
trees.
Dense,
like,
right?
Old year, like, a lot of years those trees have grown.
Yeah. And I'm wondering if it gets on the Appalachian Trail, too.
You know, really?
The one that goes from, like, the south all the way up to Maine. I wonder if it's part of it.
They made sure. They probably made sure it went off route. Didn't touch too close.
Right.
Huh. All right. I want to know. Yeah, that's interesting. And being, you know, not too many states over, it seems like I've never heard of it, which is, I think, all about ghost towns. And hopefully, even if you've heard our stories or part, you know, in the past, hopefully it just brings some new light in some situations or can help you just connect to like the genealogy part that we like about family history. So,
yeah. And we want to say thank you. We've been getting more listeners, more intrigue. So, if you like subscribe to us on any of the ways you listen to podcasts on Amazon, Spotify, leave a review. So we just really appreciate like your comments you leave on Facebook and the engagement. So just, you know, we want to say thank you and keep it up.
Yep. And just remember, it's not a matter of if you will find a shadow in your family tree, but when, because behind every family tree, there are shadows.
Thanks for listening.